This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Challenges we all face. I'll use my experience as a social worker, civil rights activist, union organizer, and family violence child abuse prevention specialist, along with my experiences in fundraising. For all of our sakes, vote for harmony and peace in my 7-part growth plan. Vote for Joseph K.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbian, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Polinsky.
I'm Deborah Bell.
J.D. Doyle.
Glenn Holt.
LSR Saliba.
And this evening, we're going to be doing a coming out special or just regular program? Man, let's make it special.
Well, yeah, because October 11th has been deemed National Coming Out Day ever since the March on Washington that was held October 11th in 1987. I seem to remember a guy named Jack Polinsky being there.
Yes. Well, you were running the damn thing, weren't
no,
you?
No, no. That was the one before the
okay,
one
that's right.
that
yes.
I participated in organizing.
Well, in this evening's program, we're going to be talking about coming out. And one of our contributors, Greg Chapman, did a actually nationally coming out on NPR, All Things Considered. In this, I believe. So we're going to be talking about that. Greg won't be with us this evening, but...
No, he's off to Canada with his partner, Tony, and hope they're having a wonderful time.
And in the vein of coming out, Beth Brock will be with us about the upcoming production of the Laramie Project, which will be held at San Jacinto College. And that actually sounds like a great thing. It's in Pasadena, no less.
Yeah, and they're also holding a candlelight vigil that will be held October 12th, the anniversary of the death of Matthew Shepard.
And in the second hour, we're going to be talking to Sally Huffer about what's going on at the Montrose Counseling Center and their coming out group. How perfect. Well,
yeah.
You really did a great job.
Their coming out group and also their casual community education, which is about dating and stuff. Not necessarily casual dating, but casual, it's just a forum where people can talk and break the ice about things that you can do to get to know other people. And hopefully we're going to have the folks from the Houston Equal Rights Alliance to talk about the importance of early
coming out and voting.
Yeah, excellent, Jack.
Well, and tomorrow is the last day that you can bring your cards, or I believe you can still get them postmarked by tomorrow if you haven't registered to vote yet. And the best and easiest way to do that is at harrisvotes.org on the website. And in fact, I got to commend the Chronicle. They've actually been printing, I think twice in the past couple weeks, they printed a voter registration card in the paper that you can actually cut out and fill out. And if you're not registered to vote, you probably should be turning to a different station. Because we
really?
Talked about this. I mean, politics are very important. And electing candidates, and we've got some stuff that we'll talk about in that segment.
Yeah, and the importance of voting, even though people say, oh, it's all rigged and all like that, we still need to do it. Your vote does count. And if it's not being counted, we got to find out how to make those folks that are making that the problems with the electronic voting, we've got to fix that so we know that our votes are counted. And, you know, Hubert Vaux, who is a candidate that has the HGLB an avocado political caucus action committee, their political action committee endorsement, and he won by a very, very narrow margin.
Those
last time
count.
And he put himself on the line with the Proposition 6 last time, and so he really is deserving of the community support, and the folks from HERA will talk about that as well. It looks like, due to technical difficulties, we won't have this way out. So we're going to have to...
We're working on it, but not right away.
Okay, perhaps we'll get it sometime during the show, but it won't be the the beginning segment as we had hoped that to have news wrap.
Yes, we're looking for that, and maybe we can download it, but it didn't come over the satellite like it usually comes over.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's all magic to me.
Yes,
all
it
that
is
stuff.
All magic. But first up, we got some music, don't we?
We got a coming out song. What a coincidence.
How appropriate.
And come out wherever you are.
And we'll be playing that song as...
As soon as Clint punches
kids pies raising.
Take
is Queer Voices.
I've been a sad girl, I've been a bad lover, and I've been NJD. Not to fear, we are working on getting news wrap from This Way Out, but in the meantime, it gives us a chance to play some music, and that's always a good thing.
We heard Zrazy starting off that set. We love the group Zrazy, and I, of course, picked a coming out song for all our coming out segments we have. The song was Come Out Everybody from their album called Come Out Everybody from 1997, and we added another song for you from that same album called Confession. Later in the show, we're having a segment on the Laramie Project, and so we have some Matthew Shepard songs, starting off with one by Melissa Etheridge.
This is Queer Voices.
And killed them all.
Matthew Sherpett song called Matthew by an artist friend of mine, Clark Carlton.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, just about everything we had for tonight planned was not quite exactly the way we had done it.
I guess
we may have to fire you, Deborah. I can't afford to fire you.
Yeah.
No, it's... I know you work
very
hard.
And just when I was going to ask for my salary to be doubled.
You're right. Right.
Keeps you sharp.
Yeah. October 11th is National Coming Out Day, and the message of the day is to take your next step. If you're not out at all, take that first step of telling someone else. If you've done that, then go on to the next place, maybe getting involved in an organization. Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays is holding a workshop this coming Saturday called Finding Our Voices. Come out, wherever you are. And they say gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgenders and supportive allies are constantly being urged to come out. And we're told by too many people that don't know us, and when they do know us, it's their first step before towards becoming more open and supportive of GLBT issues. But for many of us, finding our voices is much easier said than done. We are hesitant and fearful of losing friends, family, members, jobs, neighbors, religious support, fearful of invading someone else's space with our issues, fearful of making waves, rocking the boat, being too aggressive. Yet when we do dare to explain the need for equal human rights for ourselves and our loved ones, when we do dare to counter an ugly or misinformed comment, we are invariably pleased and delighted with our step forward. And of course, we're fearful of bodily harm and possible death, as the Matthew Shepard case so graphically illustrates. Finding Our Voices is a workshop designed to help GLBT people and supportive friends and family to become more comfortable with presenting their human life stories and to educate the public about the truth of sexual minorities. It'll be facilitated by Paul Cross, the Theater and Speech Chair at Challenge Early College High School of HISD. PFLAG invites you to increase your self-confidence in speaking out regardless of your current stage of comfort. Some of you may go on to join panels with the Speakers Bureau, or you may wish to keep a lower profile. But all are welcome at this most important workshop, and you will leave feeling better equipped to deal with these issues in the future. And this, I think, is really profound. Remember, your silence is consent to future discrimination. Finding Our Voices will take place on Saturday, October 14th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the GLBT Community Center, 3400 Montrose, Suite 207. There's free parking in the garage off of Hawthorne. Register with Kat Sabai. I'm guessing at the pronunciation of that name. It's CSABIH at houston.rr.com, or call 936-271-1453. The workshop is offered at no charge. So that's one way that people can take their next step.
One thing that people underestimate is the ripple effect of coming out. The people you come out to can become valuable allies. And I've had personal experiences where people I came out to, later they would relate to me where something homophobic came up in conversation and they challenged that person. So they wouldn't have done that had not I taken the first step.
That's true. We do have an impact. And some of us, because we weren't comfortable coming out to very many people, often for fear of losing our families, I think that may be the biggest scary one.
There's church.
There's jobs.
There's there's community. And, I mean, let's say you were a Republican. That's probably much harder to come up.
Oh, no, don't say that.
Holding a elected office.
Yes.
And,
what an interesting concept.
Yes, certainly as time has gone on, it's been easier, at least in this country.
Well, I was watching The View today. You know, it's gotten pretty good since Rosie O'Donnell is on there, and she really shakes it up, and she speaks her mind, and there's the young woman, Elizabeth, some name I don't remember, who is married to a football player, and she's right-wing and conservative, and they kind of got into it, but they do it in a respectful way of presenting their positions, but she's on television, Ellen's on, and of course she did the very brave thing of coming out publicly via her television program. And
well, it's interesting that after she came out, her program was canceled, and then I would guess she probably had a little bit of a tough time getting back into the entertainment business. And then she comes out with this show, and not that I'm a fan of daytime talk shows, but she does that show very well.
Excellent, and she's so loved, and she's won all kinds of Emmys, and she's going to host the Academy Awards, and, you know, I think it's wonderful that more and more people
she
are being accepted.
The Emmys right after 9/11. Remember, it was canceled
right.
twice,
yes.
or delayed
and
twice.
And you know you're not supposed to say 9/11.
She
never says so.
She was excellent in that.
Yeah, she handled it really well. Of course, we have other people that are feeling braver about coming out. And for each one of them that do, it makes it that much easier for the next person. Now, for one person that it was really difficult to come out because of his religious beliefs and teachings was our comrade, Greg Chapman, and he wrote an essay for the NPR series, This I Believe, and he talked about his story of coming out and dealing with it and accepting himself, and that collection of This I Believe stories is now in a book form and on CD. So if you want to hear, and we might play it in the near future, because it was how I connected with Greg and invited him to be part of our collective here on Queer Voices.
Well, and as we have, three of us have come out quite a while ago, things have certainly changed from that time to now. We have kids coming out in high school, which is great.
And well, you know, you remember the Santa Fe School District?
Yes.
The one that had the case against saying prayer before football games, and they were willing to take it to the Supreme Court and all that. They now have a gay straight alliance.
Wow.
And
how many years between those events?
Well, not that many.
That's amazing.
I mean, I remember when that first came up and the things that were going on then, and this is the first gay straight alliance to be formed in Galveston County, and they have an average of 40 to 50 students attending meetings, and the school officials have stated that no negative reaction has been noted among the students.
No, those are brave kids. I salute
yes.
them.
Yeah.
And the friends also, the straight people who join these alliances to be friends to the GLBT community, that's awfully brave too.
Well, there was an article written that appeared in the Galveston, the Daily News, and by Sinead Sill, and she she talks about the school district what they went through in forming this, but the person that I got this information from is a member of PFLAG, and she said that her youngest son was in one of the geometry classes of Mrs. Mantooth, who is the faculty monitor, and who is an excellent math instructor who is well-liked among her students. In 2000, the majority of the school board members were ultra-conservative, particularly the board president. So I guess this is when the school prayer case came up. The decision to pursue the school prayer case all the way to the Supreme Court was opposed by many in the community because only Christian prayers were being said before football games and members of other faiths were excluded. This school board also vigorously supported abstinence-only health education, even though Santa Fe had one of the highest teen pregnancy rates in the county. When the school board president came up for re-election, he was overwhelmingly defeated, along with some of the other ultra-conservative board members. So things happening right down the road in little Santa Fe, Texas. Imagine that.
Well, and it's each individual who decides to take that brave step.
Yeah, and the thing that we always say, if you're a young person, you're living at home, you're dependent on your parents, coming out to them may not be the wisest thing to do. You always have to consider your safety first in any situation. I mean, there are places I go that I don't, You know, I'm not going to be wearing nobody knows I'm a lesbian shirt or something. You know, one of my sons recently told me how hard it was for him growing up and being a teenager and having a mom that was like all over the place going, I'm a lesbian.
Yes.
And
And I remember that.
Just as we have to come out, though, our family members often have to face disclosure. And some of them do it quite well. Some of them learn and grow. People like Sue and Jim Null, who now are like the biggest cheerleaders for our community that you could imagine. There are places, resources in the community to help you so that you can find community. And we know the depths of the closet can be very deep, and they can also suffocate you. So on this, it's almost been how many years now? 15 years? Since 1987? 20 years, almost 20 years since the first National Coming Out Day. So we urge you to take your next step and come on out.
Well, with that being said.
With that being said, what? We're going to go to music. We're going to
go this way out.
Do we have time to? Don't. It's almost time for our first interview. I think we should do our interview and then we'll do This Way Out. We can put it in later.
Okay.
How does that sound?
That's fine.
Okay, because we have our guests waiting out there. So can we play a little bridge of music, and we'll bring our guests in? All right. That's what we're going to do then.
Jerry Falwell's favorite deacon scampered up the aisle at church, sporting lavender pajamas and a matching purple purse, with a triangle tiara and the cutest little hop. Tinky Winky made him do it. Even God can't make him stop. So now Jerry's on the Tinky with his soft and supple ways. How he captivates the children and recruits them all as gays. How he undermines their virtue, all that's manly, strong, and straight. Tinky Winky's tempting toddlers, and they're going for the bait. Do you think that Tink's the Antichrist, the Winky Viet Cong, with his decadent accessories and tantalizing song? You beat the same old drum, Jerry, you stir the same old pot. Tinky Winky must be banned, Tinky Winky should be shot. Ah, but Tinky's hard to find, out on a cold Wyoming night, where two losers cruise the bar scene, and they're spoiling for a fight. But they do find Matthew Shepard, and he's small, alone, and gay. It's 2-1, they got a gun, they're taking him away. You know what happens next, Jerry, you know, and you know why. They left him hanging on a fence to bleed and freeze and die. The word is father to the deed you can't undo. No, it wasn't Tinky Winky, Jerry, maybe it was you. For the word may shine like lightning, but the thunder sounds like hate. If they came to get you, Jerry, would you care that they were straight? If you were holed up in the bathroom, would you finally understand why the policeman at the door has got a broomstick in his hand? Tinky Winky may be boring, Tinky Winky may be quaint, Tinky Winky may be holy and be canonized a saint. Tinky Winky may be dumb, Jerry, but when push comes to shove, Tinky Winky will not hate you, no matter who you love. Scanning your old sermons, and in one of them I read, is it true? Is it loving? Does it need to be said? That's three strikes and you're out. Jerry, it's time to scrap the speech. Take a tip from Tinky Winky and practice what you preach. Why don't you practice what you preach?
That delightful twist song was by Charlie King, a very supportive member of the straight community. He's done many songs with gay subjects. That one was called Tinky Winky.
This is Queer Voices.
I loved it when Tinky Winky was outed by Jerry Falwell.
Mm-hmm. It's the purse. Yeah.
The red purse.
Yeah,
I mean, all lesbians have red purses. It actually was the shape, because Tinky Winky had the lesbian shape. I'm telling you, that hair shape.
I'm not going there.
I can speak, because I am a lesbian. Back to the somber subject of, and it's kind of ironic that the day after National Coming Out Day was when Matthew Shepard was killed in a hate crime. And San Jacinto College Central Film and Theater Department is going to be playing, what would you say?
Producing.
The Laramie Project. And it's to shed a light on hate. There's a candlelight vigil. Mm-hmm. And Beth Kunkel-Brock.
Bork.
See, I got it wrong.
That was close.
Kunkel Bork.
Yes.
Who was wonderful as Lysistrata.
Oh, you're kind.
I love that's one of the best theater I've seen. That was brilliant. And
Jeff Sinsett.
And you're the director?
I'm the director, yes.
You're the director. And Beth, are you playing in the
I'm actually in the Laramie Project as well.
Yeah. Well, tell us exactly what the Laramie Project is.
Well, I'm going to let Jeff answer that question.
One of you.
Because he's very eloquent in responding.
Okay, well,
to this.
I may not be tonight. Let's find out. The Laramie Project is actually a retelling of the beating and death of Matthew Shepard through the words of the people in Laramie through interviews that took place over approximately a year and a half. What occurred after Matthew was beaten and left tied to the buck fence outside of the outskirts of Laramie.
What's a buck fence?
A buck fence, it's an odd-looking little machination. It has these cross braces that look like X's. Everyone, can you see that?
In the viewing
audience. Yeah. Arms in front of you.
I'm using my Italian sign language tonight. It has these huge crosses and then large horizontal cross braces that go across that attempt to keep out
You see them in the Old West where they normally tie their horses to those types of fences.
Right. Yeah, anybody that has seen one will know, that kind of fence.
Yeah. Right.
And do they also have barbed wire on them?
No, these particular ones don't. No, they're made completely of timber.
Uh-huh.
The interesting thing about this particular, if you want to talk about that for a moment, this particular buck fence is that it wasn't a complete long buck fence like you would expect. It wasn't a long section. It was four cross braces. It was almost a ceremonial, if you look at it. The area where Matthew was tied had some stones on the ground with the buck fence, and it was almost sacrificial. And when you look at it, I think that's one thing that actually struck a chord with the nation, because the look of these things, it very much, if you look at it, would resemble a crucifixion.
Well, and the whole Matthew Shepard death and the beating prior to the death really brought to the forefront the intolerance and hatred that existed in the United States. So that was a very positive thing that came out of this horrific crime.
Yeah, and it was 8 years ago.
8 years mm-hmm. ago this Thursday on the 12th.
And so what's going to happen on the 12th here in...
On the 12th at 6:30 on the steps of Slocum Auditorium at San Jac Central, we're going to have a candlelight vigil. We actually have a speaker from PFLAG who will come to speak.
Dr. Don Sinclair.
Yeah. Reverend Sinclair. And he will come to speak. And we also will have a reading of names, of 130 names of people who have been affected and been victims of hate crimes. And it will be a very powerful thing. We encourage the community to come out and participate.
And tell people where San Jacinto College is. Really should be San Jacinto.
It's fairly easy if you're coming 45 south. If you take a left on Beltway 8, then a right on Spencer Highway.
And that's before you've got to pay tolls, so you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, actually, you don't have to pay. That's right. That's right. A right on Spencer Highway, and if you go past Pasadena into Deer Park area, it's going to be, it's actually in Pasadena, but it's on the right-hand side
before
of
Deer
Spencer
Park.
Highway.
It's really easy to find, and it's very wonderful directions on their website at San Jac.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is that website?
sanjac.edu.
Yeah. Okay. And you're having the vigil, and then there's 2 weekends of the performance of the play, which will be when?
October 20th through the 29th. And the 20th, the date, that opening day, is actually we're having special matinees for students, as well as special ticket pricing for both Fridays.
So is it just Friday, Saturday?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, so Friday night, Saturday night, evenings, and then Sunday matinees.
Right.
I think I've read the word this play is one of the most produced plays in the country.
It certainly is, yeah.
I can't remember the playwright's name.
Moises Kaufman. And and actually it was Moises with a bevy of writers and friends and theatrical compadres from the Tectonic Theater Project in New York. They actually sent a group of them, 10 of them actually went after Matthew was killed. And like I said, over a year and a half, a couple of different visits, they interviewed over 200 people. These members of the Tectonic did. And then what they did is they compiled the play and actually played the roles themselves. The original cast was just a handful of people. But the play has over 60 characters.
Wow.
So you have multiple parts by the actors.
Yeah.
Exactly. Very fluid presentation.
I've seen a production of this, and it was stunning. Stunning. Just it's a powerful play.
The really interesting thing about this play is that it doesn't beat you over the head.
Right. It's not a downer.
No. And to use a quote from one of the characters in the play, Doc O'Connor is a really colorful character. He said that at the bottom of it all is H-O-P-E, hope. And that really is the message here, that we actually get to visit what occurred to Matthew through the words of these people and experience this horrible crime through their words, through their emotions, and like we said, it is a microcosm of hate and intolerance in the United States and the world.
For the people that may not know, tell us who Matthew Shepard was and what happened and why it's important to do this show now.
Okay. Matthew was a 21-year-old, at the time, he was a 21-year-old college student going to the University of Wyoming. Mm-hmm. He was beginning, actually, I guess I could say, to feel his oats for the first time because he was becoming an activist. One of his best friends, Romaine Patterson, remembers that most of the time he had his television turned to news stations. Mm-hmm. He had just
joined the gay lesbian group on campus.
Right, yes. Romaine, his best friend, was gay. She was a lesbian. And what occurred was he actually went to a place in the city of Laramie one night, the Fireside Bar, and was...
Was that a gay bar?
Mm-hmm. No. Just a bar in town, a little tavern. It's still there today. Mm-hmm. And two gentlemen walked in, Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson.
Two men. I wouldn't call them gentlemen.
No. Well, no. Let me rephrase.
I'm being kind.
Two men walked in and convinced Matthew to go with them to get a ride home. And what transpired was that he was beaten on the head with a .357 Magnum. I don't know if you've ever seen one, but the barrel on these things are about a foot long, and he was beat so many times about the head. His head was misshapen and swollen when he was actually finally found by Reggie Flutie, the deputy, the next morning. He spent 18 hours in the elements tied to this buck fence with his arms behind his back so that he was barely breathing the next morning, and the bicyclist who found him actually thought he was a scarecrow. And he said the only thing that tipped him off was that he saw the breathing. He saw Matthew breathing, but even then he thought it was a mechanism put into a scarecrow. The thing that tipped him off was the hair.
So his body was hung on this fence.
He was tied about 4 inches up off the ground. So
he wasn't standing up.
He was laying on the ground, and within it, he's been laying there long enough that there's definite evidence that he's got blood on his head and all underneath him that's been dried. So
what was the weather? Was it?
It was cold. It was October. Yeah. It was chilling weather.
Wyoming,
and
he
was in the elements for 18 mm-hmm. hours, so he was barely alive when they found him. He lived for 5 days unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most interesting and startling images that come out of this play is actually from a line that from one of Beth's characters, Reggie mm-hmm. Flutie, the deputy who found Matthew.
Why don't you give us that line?
Well, I don't exactly know which one he's referring
well,
to.
I'll refresh her. It's her recollection of his condition when she found him.
Oh, that there's dried blood all over his head, and the only place on his head, on his face, that there's not blood is where it appears that he's been crying down his face. And everything else is totally covered. So that was the imagery that's within this play is very real, and it's seen through so many different characters and so many different viewpoints. But I hand it to Moises and the Tectonic group, and that they really did give you an overview and present you with all sorts of different religions and backgrounds and those sorts of things.
Yeah, while certainly the play and the playwrights have a point of view, it does not coerce. Whether you are a hard line, either way, whether mm-hmm. you are right wing, left wing, out of the ballpark, it will speak to you in some way.
Mm-hmm. So it will appeal to a wide range mm-hmm. of audience members.
Right.
Because what it does is that, in Houston, we've been dealing with our own hate crimes and those sorts of things, most recently with the high school student, the young Hispanic high school student. But it really does speak to how a community deals with a crime of this nature, because so many people spend time saying it's not going to happen in my backyard,
mm-hmm.
but this is our backyard, and this is definitely representative of America as a whole.
And of course, those of us in Houston that have been around a while, we remember all too vividly the hate crime that killed Paul Broussard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like his mother Nancy, Matthew's mom has become quite the advocate. Do you know if he was out to her before this happened?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
So he had come out to his mom, and I want to say her name is Jean. Is that right?
Judy.
Judy.
Mm-hmm. Judy Shepherd.
I got
uh-huh.
J right. Judy Shepherd. Yes. And what a thing to have to carry on.
There's a website too, and I can't recall, but there's a Matthew Shepherd Foundation website.
That's it. MatthewShepherdFoundation.org.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I've collected over 30 songs that were inspired by Matthew Shepherd on my own site, QueerMusicHeritage.com. There's a whole page. You can hear them all and be inspired.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we close off, Beth and Jeff.
Yes, you got it.
Oh, gosh, I'm getting better. There's hope yet. Tell us again when the vigil will be.
Okay. The vigil is 6:30 on the 12th, which is this Thursday. If you need more information, you can always email me at beth@slightlyoffcenterplayers.com. And it's exactly how you think it's spelled.
Is that long enough for you?
I forgot to say that. The name of the theater group is the Slightly Off-Center yeah. Players. I like that.
And the show itself is October 20th through 29th. And the telephone number, Jeff, that they can call to get tickets and information?
The ticket telephone number at the college is 281-476-1828.
That's correct.
Oh, good.
That's
you have
what
that.
It says
well,
right there.
Okay, good.
Me.
All right.
So we hope that folks will get out and support this production, and if you can, to participate in the candlelight vigil. Perhaps wherever you are, you can light a candle that night in Matthew's memory, and also in memory of all the folks that we have lost due to hate crimes. This is Deborah Bell. You're listening to Queer Voices.
God must be sleeping. God's on a bus or out of the office on a really long lunch. She's held up in traffic or walking a beach. Clearly God's somewhere she cannot be reached. For if God only knew what's being done in her name, she'd realize the humans have all gone insane. She must not have noticed we're not doing well. And when she sees this nonsense, she'll be pissed as hell. We burn her best witches, refuse recompense for stolen land.
and their hearts fill with pride. Each one convinced they've got God on their side. If God only knew what's being done in her end, she'd realize the humans have all gone insane. She must not have noticed we're not doing well. And when she sees this nonsense, she'll be pissed as hell. Mom, little children walk into school. An eye for an eye is the new golden rule. Blow up a building, thrive on discord, and line up to claim your eternal reward. Oh, if God only knew what's being done in her name. Oh, if God only knew what's being done in her name. From crusades to jihad, we wage holy wars. And when God finds out, she is gonna be sore. Once she discovers the damage we've done, she'll recall our brains and opposable thumbs. Oh, if God only knew what's being done in her name, she'd realize the humans have all gone insane. She must not have noticed we're not doing well. And when she sees this nonsense, we're all right in hell. Oh, if God only knew what's being done in her name. If God only knew. If God only knew. If God.
Yes, if God only knew. That was Deidre McCalla from her album Playing for Keeps, and she's one of the artists who will be performing in Houston on October 21st at the Houston Women's Festival.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Happy, are you?
I'm happy to be here, too.
Yes. I'm happy to be gay, and I'm happy to be here on Queer Voices. And I love that song. It's just like, you know, if you're happy, you know it. Clap your hands. It's kind of like that. And as we were saying, this is the month. This is Gay and Lesbian History Month, and it is the month that we have National Coming Out Day, October 11th. On October 11th, 1987, there was a march on Washington for lesbian and gay rights, and that was also the first time the AIDS Memorial quilt was laid on the Mall. And it was an incredible week of activism and participation in the political process, because the right to assemble is one of those rights that we have, and seeing that quilt and hearing the names was an incredible experience, and then marching and seeing our numbers. So that is that's why we have National Coming Out Day. The next year, somebody said, hey, you know, we should have a day where we'd encourage people to come out. And so the Montrose Counseling Center, which we said Sally Hupper was going to be here, because Sally is usually the person we contact to say, hey, Sally, you want to have someone on to talk about some of the things going on? Because they always have either new programs or special programs, and so we want to make sure that folks know about them.
I think I'll be her alter ego tonight.
Okay, and so with us is Chris
Kerr.
I want to say Carr like Deborah Carr. Okay, Chris Kerr, who is the program coordinator for the LIFE program with Montrose Counseling Center, and that includes HATCH, which is the youth group, the general psychology program, the coming out group, and SPRY, which is the group for seniors.
Seniors preparing for rainbow years.
Yeah, for old gay and lesbian people. for all queers.
It's young at heart, but yes.
Young, and they are. I mean, some of them run circles around me.
Yes.
You know, I'm a member of LOAF, the Lesbians Over Age 50, but some of those women are in their 70s, and they're just... They go.
Yes.
They get it. They hop in the RV and hit the road, and they go. So, Chris, tell me a little bit about the coming out group. I know there's been several over the years, but there's one currently going on, or they're about to start a new session.
Coincidentally, it's starting this Wednesday, October 11th, which is National Coming Out Day, and so we're starting a 8-week coming out support group. It's going to be for 8 Wednesday nights, and that brings us right up to Christmas, and then they'll meet for a few Wednesdays after that, but the group itself will decide how much to meet into January. And it's open to anybody. You don't have to be a client to the Montrose Counseling Center. You just have to be interested in the coming out process and wanting to make some growth, some movement, or some improvement in your own personal coming out journey. If somebody is thinking about coming out but is feeling stuck, feeling scared, feeling isolated or alone, this kind of support group, which will be free, is a great place to come and connect with people and start the journey.
And Denise, you're a facilitator for this group?
Yes, I'll be one of two facilitators for the group. We're really looking forward to it and just kind of trying to create a space that's positive and affirming and supportive for people who are undergoing the process.
So what is the, how does it work in the group? I mean, you say you're sitting around in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you begin? What are some of the first messages you're telling people?
Well, the group is kind of a psychoeducational group, so there is sharing and there's personal talking as people get comfortable, but there's also educational input, information, helping people get good, accurate direction information in the coming out process. We, when we designed the program, we used as kind of a rough model a book, Outing Yourself by Michelangelo Signorelli. He's a pretty famous columnist, I think, in the gay community. And he pretty much said, you know, if you start with, you know, I'm completely in the closet and I'm just beginning to become aware who I am and that I might be gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and then at the very end there's I'm out to everybody in the world all the time, he sort of outlined there's some certain steps, some necessary work to do that right and to accomplish that and to actually make it make sense so I don't get stuck or blocked. And I like that because the first few steps that he makes is, number one was we have to address our own internal self-loathing, our own internalized homophobia.
Right.
It's impossible to
grow. The first person you come out to is yourself.
Yes. And we can be as rough and brutal on ourselves as the world has been to us. You know, we call that internalizing society's heterosexism or just internalizing that prejudice and stereotypes, the negative stereotypes against gay people, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, and to the extent where I believe them, and then I start saying those things to myself. One way of handling that is by identifying it and talking about it and meeting other people like myself and saying, well, gee, they're not all the demons I thought people were supposed to be. But another way to handle that, too, is one of the other steps, which is get in touch with our history. Reclaim our GLBT history.
I think J.D. would support that because Queer Music Heritage not only is he's archiving our musical history, but he has lots of things on his website that have to do with things over the years and knowing. And it's
if you want to rob a group of people of their identity and their self-esteem, the best way and the first way is you need to rob them of their history.
Uh-huh.
And that's been done because so many famous people are de-identified, so you don't know that they might have been gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered. And the only role models you see often are the negative ones. When someone does something terrible, they happen to mention that this gay, you know, serial killer was out on the loose as opposed to this famous scholar or Nobel Prize laureate was also gay.
Yeah. So by or the man who broke the code so that we won World War II.
Yes, exactly.
In fact, in The Normal Heart, which Joe Watts just produced, there's a wonderful monologue that the character Ned Weeks gives, And he lists all these names of, these are my people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And yes. And realizing that, I mean, it kind of gives you chills to say I'm part of that. That includes me. We're, being gay or lesbian isn't just something that happens in our bedrooms. It's, we are a people and with an identity and with a history. And so
exactly.
I'm so glad that that's a component.
I always tell our therapists, never underestimate the power of that history, because, you know, if you've been out for a while and you work in a, you know, an agency where it's targeted to the GLBT community, you can get kind of used to all of that. But if you're deep in the closet and you really don't know of anyone else, usually when we ask this group, because usually the people show up are, for these groups are people who really need some help in the coming out process. And oftentimes they know very few people, or at most they'll know, well, there's Elton John and there's Ellen, right. and then they're stuck. And, you know, who else?
Well, George Michael, you know, because he's always... doing stuff.
So doing that research,
for it.
Doing that research just opens up a whole world, and it's like you said, it's my people. I'm not alone.
Is it mostly young people?
No, we have people across the spectrum, mm-hmm. because coming out happens across the spectrum. We have people who have been married and had raised their kids, and now are realizing that this has been something different about mm-hmm. them. But we do have people, teenagers. We have people anywhere along the way. Some people realized they were gay, you know, 20 years ago, but they've been stuck or just feeling like they had to keep that hidden, and now they say, I don't want to be hidden anymore, but I don't know what to do next, mm-hmm. or what I've been trying to do isn't working, so let me meet with a group of people who can help me.
I wish we could find a way to express it as there being something different, because it's not really a difference. The difference is the difference is the same. And what I mean is, you know, because it's the same sex.
Well, I like mm-hmm. to think the difference is something that's special, it's blessed, it's
right.
extraordinary, it's gifted. But society tells people, and most people when they talk about that first awareness, often as a very young person,
shame comes with it.
They'll say I was different and that was not good. It was
right.
something wrong with that different.
Are you hear those messages there
yes.
in church or through your parents?
Yes.
I mean, I remember some comments that were made in my family, and it was like, I didn't think it was bad because I was attracted to both men and women, but I thought, what's wrong with that?
Right.
I mean, I just couldn't understand why people thought that was a bad thing. It's like more people to love. What mm-hmm. is wrong with that? That never played with me.
I think a really important aspect of the group, in addition to the historical context, is going to be just lending a sense of community to people who have been kind of otherized for so long and not really having a sense that there's any normalcy or, you know, any connection to other people who are going through the same experience, that it's really important to know that I'm not the only person going through this. I'm not the only person at this age going through this. And just kind of shared experience, shared space to lend a sense of community and connection to people.
And, of course, the groups at the counseling center are confidential groups. So
yes,
you're
completely.
Being there. It's like the thing about Vegas, what goes on, what is said, what is heard, what is shared in that group is to remain within
we'll
that group.
Right, absolutely.
No one runs out and says, oh, guess who I saw at the coming out group? No, that's not.
And the counseling center is a place where it's guaranteed when you walk in, people will accept you for who you are, and your orientation will not be a negative issue.
Right.
It'll be celebrated, and you'll be welcome just as anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
In the group too, once we get beyond that, you know, that low self-esteem and that the internalized homophobia, reclaiming our history, we also then kind of deal with the normal topics that people have about coming out to
such
family,
as.
Coming out, should I come out at the workplace? What and
Will and Grace, is the lesbians are supposed to come out on Thanksgiving?
Yes. Yeah. Or besides talking to family in the workplace, there's also healing some past hurts, and there's one other one. Oh, spirituality. It's a big
right.
one.
Oh, yes.
Trying to make sense of all of the negative things around religion and spirituality that gay and lesbians have had to deal with. And all these things, I want to make sure people understand, too, all these things that each individual is empowered to do what they choose to do. There's no force. There's no,
right.
now that you're here, we're going to force you to come out of the workplace. We're going to force you to go home.
Right. There'll be a billboard up on I-45.
I always have to explain to people, because I believe this reality, and that's part of the basis for this group, is that each person has to make a decision between two factors. One is that there is very real discrimination in this world still.
Yes.
That you can still lose your job, you can still lose your housing, you can still be thrown out from your family, thrown out of your church. You can face real losses because you are a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered person. On the other hand, there's the reality that the more your insides match your outsides, and the more out you are in the sense that I'm this unified, integrated person, the happier you are, the less depressed, the more energy, the more of a positive, constructive person, loving person you can be for yourself and others. So you really have to balance those two, and it's each person, and all of us, even people who have been out for years and years and years, every day still has to weigh that balance.
Yes, even myself, even Jack Belinsky. I mean, we every time you meet someone new or in a new situation, there's that opportunity for coming out.
Right.
And once again, there are times when it's not a good idea.
I mean, you might take a new job and have to sit down and weigh, now, how smart is it to come out on the first day, or who here is safe, or is it completely open, and where's my integrity with that, and what's going to be my level of comfort and willingness?
Hopefully you've done some research, and you're looking at those companies that do have non-discrimination policies, or maybe even spousal benefits for same-sex couples and
we do try to cover all that, because that is one of our messages, that there's always homework to be done in this coming out process. It's far, you have much more control when you've done the homework rather than just blurting it out here or there. Even with family, you know, one of the things I liked about
Michelangelo.
Cignarelli's schema was, when coming out to family is step eight. And I used to deal with people when I used to do coming out, like in the college setting, coming out support groups, that they would have this logic, I'm gay, it's going to kill my parents, they can't accept it, so I can't be gay, so now I'm stuck
and depressed. There's not one single documented case of someone coming out to a parent and having that parent kill over.
Just dropped it, yes.
Of course, there's some parents that we kind of wish that we could have done that with, but...
So when they come with that logic, so I'm stuck because I can't come out, they're always surprised.
And sometimes you do lose family. You're never fully accepted. PFLAG is a wonderful resource for that.
Yeah. Well, it's important to build your family of choice before you come out to your family, if at all possible. And I used to tell them that's step eight. And before that, you've got to take care of yourself so you're not beating yourself up. And you've got to get a support system so that if your family loves you, then you've got a bigger family. And if your family rejects you, you're not completely alone.
Right. And that you brought up about the issue of spirituality. And a lot of times people think, they hear that word and they're thinking religion.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were brought up in a mainstream religion, then the negativity, although they're there has been so much progress in the churches, that's what they carry with them and can struggle with. But there's many forms of spirituality, and if you own your own responsibility for your spirituality, you can find other paths, and there are accepting and affirming congregations. Mm-hmm.
What we try to do is empower each of the people in the group, and what I would love for them to do is, whatever your spirituality or whatever your denomination or religion, that you feel empowered to go back to the group that you were raised with and say, I'm here, I'm queer, now deal with me.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than feeling shamed and that I'm being cast out of paradise. Now, that's not realistic for some people, but we certainly, as you just said, we will let them know that in every denomination, in every religion, there is some group of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered people who say, we believe all this and we still feel that we're okay and that we belong and that we're going to be part of this. You can't get rid of us.
Okay, once again, the group is Wednesday, October 11th, National Coming Out Day.
Every Wednesday. Until Christmas, except for Thanksgiving. Starting October 11th, 6 to about 7:30 or 8. And it's at the Montrose Counseling Center, 701 Richmond. And if you're a little nervous, all you have to do is walk in the door at 701 Richmond. There'll be little signs telling you which room to go to, so you don't have to ask where it
room
is.
Room 15, it says. Yeah. No, that's the other group that's meeting in room 15.
They're going to meet in room 15, but not that first day since it's taken, but after that.
Okay.
And the phone number is 713-529-0037, and you could, if you go to extension 703, you could leave a message even and just say, I'd like to come. But you don't have to call. You can just show up this Wednesday at 6 o'clock at the Montrose Counseling Center on Richmond.
We've been talking to Chris Kerr and Denise Davis Moore from the Montrose Counseling Center about coming out and the coming out support group, And I also want to say, if you've already come out and you're ready to start dating, there's also a group that's meeting October 11th from 6 to 7:30 at 701 Richmond Avenue. And the title of this one is Come Here Often. And it's part of their casual community education series. Last time was about internet dating. This time, there's things such as figuring out what you really want. Is it love or lust? Approaching someone of interest. Awareness of your own safety and how to deal with rejection. You were afraid to ask or didn't know whom to ask. And you can mingle and socialize with others in a confidential setting. Again, there is no fee to attend. Registration is recommended but not required. Again, that magic number for the Montrose Counseling Center is 713-529-0037. And you can go on the web to montrosecounselingcenter.org for more information.
And there's no charge for any of those groups.
Thanks for being with us on Queer Voices.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for the chance.
I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 7th, 2006. Brazil's national anti-homophobia campaign may be adopted by as many as 9 other South American countries. That was the major result of a discussion on sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination during a meeting held recently in Brasilia. Representatives from Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Venezuela, and Chile attended. The Brazilian government also proposed a future seminar to address each country's laws on sexual orientation and gender identity. Minister for Human Rights Paulo Vannucci, who chaired the event, said that a change in political culture must be promoted in the region. A Spanish-language version of the Brazil Without Homophobia program was also introduced at the meeting. Claudio Nascimento, representing the National Council for the Combat of Discrimination, said that the campaign can be reproduced across Latin America and the Caribbean.
Members of the European Parliament's Intergroup on Gay and Lesbian Rights have launched a project to combat homophobic behavior in schools by releasing a report on social exclusion of LGBT youth. It's based on a survey by the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Queer Youth and Student Organization and the European branch of the International Lesbian and Gay Association. The report included results from a poll of 700 LGBT youth in 37 European countries and found that 61% have experienced prejudice and discrimination at school, 51% at home, and 30% among their friends.
Meanwhile, the Polish government has rejected an application by the national LGBT organization Campaign Against Homophobia to participate in a European Union youth program, saying it does not support actions that aim to propagate homosexual behavior and such attitude among young people. The Polish group had applied for the European Voluntary Service Program run by the European Commission to facilitate cooperation across the continent. It gives young people aged 18 to 25 the chance to spend up to 12 months in another country working as volunteers. Decisions on who can participate are made by national agencies in every EU member state. In rejecting the application of the Campaign Against Homophobia, the Polish National Agency said that the group's aims are against the policy of raising children and youth, which is implemented by the ministry. The decision would appear to contravene a ban on discrimination based on sexual orientation in the European Union and to contradict Prime Minister Jaroslaw Kaczynski's assertion during a recent EU meeting in Brussels that there is no homophobia in his country.
And while California's Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed several pro-LGBT bills into law in late September, he vetoed measures to defend students against homophobic bullying and to bar discriminatory portrayals of LGBT people in teaching materials used in the state's public schools. The Safe Place to Learn Act would have provided specific guidelines to California school districts to protect students from harassment and discrimination based on actual or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity. In his veto message, Schwarzenegger called the measure an irresponsible, unfunded state mandate. But Carolyn Laub of the GSA Network, which supports over 550 gay-straight alliance clubs in the state's high schools and middle schools, said that what's irresponsible is that the governor is ignoring over 200,000 students in California who are bullied based on actual or perceived sexual orientation every year. He's decided that the state of California should do nothing further to protect these students.
The other bill, the Bias-Free Curriculum Act, would have barred school textbooks and instructional materials from negatively portraying gays and lesbians. But Schwarzenegger claimed that the state's education laws already prevent such discrimination. An original version of the measure by out-state Senator Sheila Kuehl would have required social science textbooks to include the historical contributions of LGBT people. But after Schwarzenegger preemptively announced that he would veto it before the bill had even been voted on in the legislature, Kuehl revised it to what she believed to be a simple anti-bias bill. She called Schwarzenegger's veto inexplicable, charging that the governor, who's seeking re-election in November, had bowed to a small, shrill group of right-wing extremists. Schwarzenegger has signed bills strengthening domestic partnership laws, adding sexual orientation and gender identity to protected categories in California's fair housing laws, requiring state agencies for the aging to include programs for lesbian gay seniors, and banning the use of the so-called panic defense in criminal queer-bashing trials.
Equality advocates have vowed to ask the California Supreme Court to review an appeals court ruling this week upholding the state's ban on same-gender marriage. The 2-1 First District Court of Appeal decision reversed a March 2005 decision by a San Francisco trial judge who had ruled that banning same-gender couples from legal marriage is unconstitutional. The appeals court agreed with the state's lawyers, who argued that it's up to the legislature, not the courts, to change the definition of marriage. California lawmakers did just that last year, only to have the bill vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger. The justices also pointed to the state's strong domestic partnership laws, which give registered gay and lesbian couples most of the same rights as married heterosexual spouses, rejecting arguments from lesbi-gay advocates that such a separate but equal system is discriminatory. Both sides of the marriage equality issue have predicted all along that the California Supreme Court will be the final arbiter.
A feeding frenzy by U.S. media outlets continued this week as more revelations surfaced about Republican congressman from Florida, Mark Foley's online dalliances with teenage male congressional pages and his subsequent resignation. Through his lawyer, the former lawmaker finally confirmed the less-than-secret fact that he is indeed a gay man. He tried to explain Foley's actions by invoking a sadly familiar story that the six-term congressman suffered from alcohol abuse and had checked into an unidentified rehab facility. The lawyer also said Foley had been sexually abused by a clergyman during his early teens, though he offered no details. The fact that Foley is a practicing Roman Catholic fueled comparisons with the church's child abuse scandal and cover-up. There have been calls from within his own party for Republican House Speaker Dennis Hastert to resign, even as he insisted that Foley's follies had only come to his attention last week. Several reports have challenged that assertion, claiming that the Republican leadership team suppressed or ignored warnings from staffers about Foley during the past few years in order to protect his congressional seat. Foley had been expected to be easily reelected in the November 7th midterm elections. Some right-wing pundits charged GOP leaders with being afraid of being perceived as gay bashers for not reining in Foley. Almost laughable, considering the Republican record of defeating queer-inclusive hate crimes legislation, forcing into law the Don't Ask, Don't Tell military policy and the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, and the party's current push to add an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to ban same-gender marriage.
Tony Perkins of the rabidly anti-queer Family Research Council issued a statement claiming that the real issue in the Foley scandal was a link between homosexuality and child sexual abuse. Other conservative pundits flooded TV and radio talk shows this week, many falsely claiming that gays are far more likely to be sexual predators than heterosexual men. Some Republican operatives are calling for a purge of gay GOP staff members, saying that a clandestine network of top-level queer congressional aides had shielded Foley from scrutiny. One of many bloggers chiming in on the brouhaha wrote that what's being called the list includes 9 chiefs of staff, 2 press secretaries, and 2 directors of communications. The lesbi-gay Log Cabin Republicans issued a statement saying that the Foley affair should not be used to denigrate gay and lesbian Americans. The anti-gay groups appear more interested in using this situation to score political points than in figuring out exactly what happened in this terrible situation. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force's Matt Foreman was among several leaders of national queer advocacy groups to condemn such tactics, calling them appalling and that they smack of McCarthyism. A congressional investigation asking who knew what and when did they know it has, of course, been launched, and the FBI is reportedly conducting its own probe.
And finally, the first same-gender civil partnership was contracted this week in the Central European nation of Slovenia, as Mitja Blazik and Vicky Kern registered their union in the capital city of Ljubljana. It was anything but a celebration, however. The current law passed in July was watered down from an earlier, more comprehensive proposal. While it allows gay and lesbian couples to register their unions, it only covers property and inheritance issues and doesn't grant any other rights associated with marriage, including social security or adoption rights. It also bars family and friends from being present during the signing of the registration documents. It looked more like a car registration, not a wedding ceremony, Blazik told reporters, adding that the entire process was awful and humiliating. The couple plans to enter a discrimination complaint with Slovenia's constitutional court, vowing to delay their honeymoon until they prevail.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 7th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Kareem Ferguson.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
The creator of Benjamin Justice steps out of the shadows to reveal his own mysteries later in the program. There is reportedly only 1 6-foot lesbian, ex-Mormon, diabetic comedian and author in Australia, and her name is Sue Ann Post. Post launched her career with the multi-award-winning 1991 solo show called A Bit of a Postscript, which was also the title of her first book. Her prose and poetry have appeared in many anthologies, and her long-running column in The Age, one of the country's leading newspapers, was nominated for the 2002 Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission Print Media Award. One of Post's most popular essays is her own coming out story, which was published in the now out-of-print anthology Inside Out. She read it especially for the listeners of Queer Radio in Brisbane recently, and now for the rest of us.
Jenny was my closest friend. I thought she was the smartest, funniest, most beautiful girl at school and just could not spend enough time with her. If we'd been apprentice nuns, we would have been busted for having a particular friendship, and they would have been right. I was always a little bit jealous of her boyfriends. She had a particularly volatile relationship with Alan, and they were always breaking up and then getting back together. I remember being at a party with them when we were about 16. They had another of their huge arguments and broke up yet again. She ended up crying on my shoulder. As I was hugging her and passing the tissue, she looked up at me and said, "It's not fair. I don't even want to go out with him, really. I'd rather go out with you. It's not fair. Why aren't you a boy?" I had to sadly agree that it wasn't fair and that the two of us would have made a much better couple, but what could we do? We were both girls. I should have been a boy. It would have been perfect, because what on earth could two girls possibly do together? Like Running Bear and Little White Dove, I loved her with a love as big as the sky. But there was a deep and raging river between us, and it just about broke my heart. Two girls couldn't possibly do anything real together, except be very, very good friends. Did I mention that we were very innocent and naive? We got a bit older, and we got our P-plates, and we got a bit more adventurous. We even started driving down to Sydney. One night in particular stands out in my memory. Jenny and Peter, my best male friend from school, took me to the midnight screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show in the city. Quite frankly, it blew my little Mormon synapses. Men kissing men, women kissing women, men dressed up in women's clothes. I knew it was all perverted and wrong, but I was so fascinated and enthralled, and damn it, I just wanted to live in that film. Little added note, Susan Sarandon's breasts rock. She changed my life. Anyway, back to the text. At 19, I came out to friends, family, and church. Some of it sucked, but mostly it was okay. Most of my friends had guessed anyway. In fact, the only person who was shocked was my mother. Don't ask, it was messy. Still hadn't even kissed a woman yet, but I just knew. Knew what I was, knew what I wanted to do, just couldn't find anyone to do it with. By the time I was 21, I had also discovered coffee, alcohol, and soft drugs. Woohoo! The other memorable event of my 21st year was that I fell in love. It was well overdue, and I was more than ready for it. I guess the adolescent hormones finally decided to kick in. Garrison Keillor once said that people brought up in a fundamentalist religion have a very low excitement threshold, and he's so right. First time I kissed this woman, my stomach flipped around like an acrobat. By the time we actually slept together, I was so ready for it, I could have burst. I was like a learner driver suddenly being put behind the wheel of a V8 beast, crunching the gears and kangaroo hopping down the street with an idiot grin on my face. I didn't know exactly what I was doing, but I was loving it. Unlike my unrequited love for Jenny, long story, if you want to know more, buy my book, you cheap bastards. That first relationship was gloriously reciprocated. She was the first person to ever give me flowers, orange tiger lilies. I remember them vividly. After that first night together, I didn't stop smiling for 2 days. I smiled so much, my cheeks hurt. Our relationship lasted almost 2 years and was the best thing that ever happened in my young life. Better yet, we're still friends. I found myself making the classic mistake of sleeping with my straight friends. The way it usually happened was we'd both get very drunk, fall into bed together, and wake up to one of those awful, awful, ego-destroying conversations. I don't know why that happened. I was really drunk. I mean, I like you as a friend and everything, but I don't think I'm like, that. It was an accident, and it won't happen again. Quick note, quite a percentage of them ended up being gay after all. Ha! Just not with me. I sometimes suspect that I was being used, subconsciously, as a safe experiment. At times I felt like the homosexuality tester kit. Just add alcohol, and if the other person turns red, it's a negative result. Geez, who thanks? Now I know I'm straight. See you around. A question I'm asked a lot in interviews is how come I'm not more bitter and angry? Here is my theory. When the straw that should have broken my back finally fell, my reaction was, oh, this is just getting ridiculous now. I refuse to take this seriously anymore. More wine for my friends, and bring on the fatted calf. Cheers, big ears, and here's looking up your kilt. The best revenge in life is always to be happier and have more fun than the person who tried to f*** you over. When I was 27, I thought that if Newton's third law of motion applied to human life, and that for every action there was indeed an equal and opposite reaction, then I was due quite a few good years. And you know what? I reckon it's happening. Life is pretty damn fine. I'm in my own little house with a white picket fence. Seriously, it makes me laugh. And the girl I love. We're all out to all and sundry and as happy as Larry Emder. We have straight friends, queer friends, bi friends, and asexual as a pillow friends. We don't care as long as they're fun. I read somewhere that the best way to bring about the world you want to live in is to pretend that you already live in it and treat people accordingly. To any young confused folk out there, just hang on. Life gets so much better. I reckon half the problem with teen suicide is stupid adults saying, ah, the teens, best years of your life, lad. Enjoy it while you can, because it is so completely and utterly wrong. Teen years suck, man, really suck. And the 20s aren't much better. But from 30 on, it gets really bloody grass. If I had to use just 2 words to sum up my ever-loving, queer, old, weird-ass life, it would be simply marvelous. Hey, thank you. I got a round of applause just for reading.
That was Australian comic author activist Sue-Ann Post, recorded by John Frame of Queer Radio in Brisbane. Post's most recent book is The Confession of an Unrepentant Lesbian Ex-Mormon, published by ABC Books in Sydney. For more info online about Sue-Ann, log on to www.sue-annpost.com.au. That's sue-annpost.com.au.
Poet Catherine Lee Bates coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Catherine Lee Bates was born in Massachusetts in 1859. She graduated from Wellesley College in 1885 and stayed on to teach English. There, she met history professor Catherine Coman, and the two became bound as one. Because female professors were poorly paid, both women also wrote books and articles. During a summer teaching job in Colorado, Bates traveled to the top of Pikes Peak. Inspired by the majestic view, she wrote a poem entitled America the Beautiful. With this poem's popularity, it was set to music by Samuel Ward. This afforded the couple a steady income and a custom-built house near Wellesley College. In 1915, after Coman's death, Bates expressed her loss, saying, quote, "So much of me died with Catherine Coman that I'm not quite sure whether I'm alive or not." Bates herself died in 1929, having touched so many lives from sea to shining sea. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRAR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
This is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. For those of us who are already out, stay tuned for the next program.
Just who is behind the Edgar and Lambda Literary Award-winning Benjamin Justice books? This Way Out's Steve Pride donned his trench coat and best noir voice to track down the gay man of mysteries and interrogate him about truth, justice, and the WeHo way.
I read my first Benjamin Justice mystery 10 years ago, a few weeks after moving to Los Angeles, City of Angels. It featured a former journalist living in the Norma Triangle of West Hollywood. Flash forward, a decade later, author John Morgan Wilson has become a friend of mine, and I can't help but notice that he is a former journalist living in the Norma Triangle of West Hollywood. Makes you think, don't it?
I'm John Morgan Wilson. I'm a writer. I've written in a number of fields: journalism, screenwriting, documentary TV writing, short stories, and mystery writing. And I've got a new mystery novel out, Rhapsody in Blood, the seventh novel in my Benjamin Justice mystery series, which has won an Edgar Award and 3 Lambda Literary Awards. And Rhapsody in Blood, number 7, and I'm working on an 8th one.
So who is Benjamin Justice, really?
Benjamin Justice is a washed-up newspaper reporter who was ruined by a Pulitzer scandal when he was a reporter for the Los Angeles Times. The story he fabricated was exposed. It ruined him. And so he remains this man who still has all his investigative instincts intact and sharp, and still has a very strong sense of justice and the underdog, but will never be able to work as a journalist again because his credibility's ruined. So he ends up working with his friend, crime reporter Alexandra Templeton, helping to solve, or sometimes solving, some of LA's most baffling crimes.
John, there are so many similarities between you and Benjamin Justice.
When I sat down to write my first novel, Simple Justice, I knew that I wanted my protagonist to be gay, and I wanted him to live in West Hollywood in the neighborhood where I lived, for a couple of reasons. One, I was tired of doing research after being a reporter for so many years. I wanted to really write fiction and not have it driven by research. And I also wanted to try to write in a more honest way than I had written before. When you're a journalist, it's easy to hide behind facts and figures and other people's quotations, but fiction is much more revealing of who the author is. Even if you're writing a character that you think is very much unlike who you are, you end up revealing a lot about yourself anyway.
Let's talk about John Morgan Wilson for a moment. When did you know you were gay?
I was born in 1945, right at the end of the war. I'm a war baby. So I came of age in the 1960s, and for gay men and women, that was still a very repressed time, as you know. The repression, both social and personal, what we did to ourselves, was so severe, you could operate in those days with a kind of denial. You almost dared not accept the fact that you were gay. I grew up in a very conservative household. I was an athlete in high school and college. I was the captain of my wrestling team in high school and college. I absolutely could not be gay. No way I could be gay. And I dated women exclusively till I was 25. It was probably as I got toward my last year in college, and certainly right after I got out of college, that I started to recognize and acknowledge feelings that I had been burying in myself with absolutely the most fierce resolve, as so many people did in those days. When I was about 25 years old, I went to Europe expressly with the goal of meeting a man and seeing if this is really who I was and what I wanted. And in fact, I did in Spain get seduced by a young man named Salvador. And I knew this is who I am, and it's time to stop lying and stop being dishonest and stop living my life to please other people and stop worrying about what everyone else thinks I should be and how I should live. I was really starting to come into my own. I'd been publishing an alternative newspaper at that point for a couple of years and writing a lot about honesty in politics and writing a lot about social issues and writing a lot about liberation. But I wasn't liberated myself personally, and I just knew it was time. And I came back from Europe, and I just came out in a huge rush to my straight friends, my family. And I was marching in the streets in 1972 in the second gay pride parade down Hollywood Boulevard, long before it was fun, safe, or fashionable.
John, I don't want to beat a dead horse because of the obvious zoning regulations, but I have to return once again to the question of how much John Morgan Wilson is in Benjamin Justice. Because quite frankly, I've never seen you together.
When I wrote Simple Justice, and I hate to talk about Simple Justice too much because it's out of print, but when I finished the first draft of Simple Justice, I thought I'd just been writing a pretty good murder mystery, and what I realized I was really writing about was grief, and in particular, grief in the age of AIDS. And I had lost my lover to AIDS in 1987. A lot of my grief and unresolved issues around that, anger, depression, sadness, really expressed itself in that first book. I learned in writing that book and in the next book that if I could find material, find elements in the plot and in the character and the character's life that I could connect to emotionally on a deep level, it would sustain me as a writer, it would sustain my interest, it would keep me involved, and it would make for better writing and a better story. And I've done that ever since. So I've tried to find in each new book something within the story material, character, plot, that I really could connect with deeply and profoundly. It just helps me write the book, and I hope it makes for a better book.
This has been a conversation with John Morgan Wilson. More information on this award-winning mystery writer can be found at johnmorganwilson.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Kareem Ferguson, Tanya Kane Perry, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, John Frame, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. You can email us at tworadio@aol.com or postal us at Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 5KIX, Kangaroo Island, South Australia, KSOW, Cottage Grove, Oregon, WEOS, Geneva and Ithaca, New York, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
there's a beat, there's a rhythm, pounding relentlessly. In the keeper's heart, it never sleeps. It's always driven to see too that every song is true. Straight on to the mark. Hit it like you mean it. Never let go of the passion. Sing every note with wild abandon, as if it just might be your last. The promise of salvation is reserved for those who keep playing it. Playing for time, playing for keeps. Can you feel the fire burning? Does a storm still rage that will not be tamed? With every breath that you are given, take your best shot, it's all you've got. Hold on and fan the flames. Hit it like you mean it. Never let go of the passion. Sing every note with wild abandon, as if it just might be your last. The promise of salvation is reserved for those who keep playing it. Playing for time.
Confess that that is the artist I want to see most, who's going to be at the Houston Women's Festival October 21st. That's Deidre McCalla singing the title song from Playing for Keeps.
So what's next on the program, hey?
Well, I guess we're going to talk a little bit about politics.
Let's talk politics.
If you're interested, you haven't registered to vote, you do have, and I was mistaken, and thanks for the caller for calling in and correcting me. You still have a chance to register and vote, but you have to take it downtown to, I think it's 1001 Preston, by 4:30 tomorrow, because today was a holiday, they extended the voter registration deadline tomorrow. Yes. Holiday to some of those people, usually up in the Northeast, Columbus Day.
So, Wednesday's a holiday, so soon they...
it's not a national
coming out day.
Yes, we know.
And also, this is something that a lot of people forget, which is that if you have moved since the last time you voted, you may be in a new precinct, and you need to register at your current precinct.
At
your new precinct.
Or go back to the old one to vote.
Right, which may not be convenient.
Well,
so
I
if you want to be able to vote in your precinct and the district and for the people that are going to be representing you, then you need
to. There's also a limit, though. I mean, if you moved 2 years ago. Well, every other year they send out a new voter registration card for you, and it does not forward, purposely does not forward, mm-hmm. to make sure you're at the address that you registered at. So if that comes back, they may delete you from the voters list. And actually, there was an article in the paper today talking about that there's like 5% less people registered to vote all over the country, but specifically in Harris County. And part of that is because they've been doing better on if you move outside the county and you register to vote there, then they notify your home county that you should be taken off the list. But people are not really good. I mean, you know, people sometimes move and they don't change your driver's license for a year, which is, that's wrong also.
And here's something else that's important is early voting. And one of the reasons it's good to early vote is that you've done your civic duty and cast your vote, and then you're free on election day to either work at the polls, work for a candidate, do push cards, or in some other way be involved in the political process. And when does early voting start?
It starts 2 weeks from today, and it's like 9 to, you know, 7 to 5 or something like that. But the weekend, the 28th, it's like, and through the 3rd is 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
I love early voting.
I know.
So easy.
It's easy. And we are going to be doing some real phone banking at the caucus, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, starting next week.
When are the endorsements out?
The endorsements,
they're currently out.
They're on the website.
And they're in the latest October issue of Outsmart Magazine.
Which is an excellent issue, by the way.
Yes.
Very lovely. The gayest and the greatest, or the greatest and the gayest, which I don't think they're necessarily correct in them, but, you know, it's what people voted.
On the there's some information about some of the things that are coming up politically on the caucus website, which is glbtpc.org, including there's a debate between Alan Cohen and Martha Wong on Wednesday at 8 p.m. at Rice University. And they actually ask you to register before going there so they can have, I guess, a head count. And they're going to start on time, from what I understand. So that ought to be real exciting.
There's not enough things to do this Wednesday and this Thursday.
Oh, the debates, I'm sorry, the debate's on Thursday. And Wednesday, there's another event that's going on.
Yeah. Well, this weekend at the State Texas Organization, National Organization for Women meeting, Barbara Ann Radnofsky was a speaker, and she is so impressive, and I was really proud that she's someone that we've endorsed. And the opinion, Jack, you think Chris Bell didn't do too well in the debate?
Well, I didn't really watch, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch the whole, I saw part of it on the web.
He far outdid the other people, and I think you can go to his website and see the debate, and then you can make your own.
Actually, you can go right to WFAA.com, which is the BLO station in Dallas, or go to KHOU.com. But I understand that it's only going to be up there for a couple of days, and they're taking it down.
Mm-hmm. And once again, early voting, do that if you can. If you don't know how to go about getting involved, then the caucus certainly is a good way to make those connections.
Right. We're going to start phone banking a week from today, starting at 6 p.m., Monday through Thursday, and then Saturdays. There's also, the best thing is go to the website, because there's also block walking, which is very, very important.
Well, what is involved in the phone banking?
You're basically calling up voters and reminding them to go out and early vote. And this should be actually pretty easy, because they are, you know, supporters. They're caucus supporters, and we have about 9,000 voter IDs within that district 137, right?
134 is the one Ellen Cohen and Martha Wonger are running in. And, of course, Ellen Cohen is the endorsed candidate by the Political Action
and by
Committee.
The Houston Chronicle.
All right, there you go. Now that we've taken care of politics, I want to go back to culture a little bit and to remind folks that the first of the Act Out series at the LA Theater starts this Thursday, William Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. And if you want more information or tickets, you can call 713-228-8421 or go to the website alleytheater.org. That's theater with an R-E. And enter the promotional code ACTOUT in order to get your tickets. There's a reception and food and all kinds of good fun stuff to do prior to the actual play. And they always do this for a community organization. A part of the proceeds from ticket sales go to help a community organization. And the community organization for this event is Casa de Esperanza, which does a lot of good work for children. And they ask you can bring diapers or different items that will help that organization. So something I always like to do. And again, Wednesday, what are we going to do? Take our next step. We'll have to challenge each other, Jack.
I'm
JD.
Gonna figure out, right. Strangers on the street. Excuse me, you don't know me, but I'm gay.
Yeah, yes. Because we're
making phone calls to strangers. Yes,
that's a good idea. That phone bank. We'll use the phone bank list. The October 21st, the Gay and Lesbian Community Center will once again start up its Queer Bingo. Unfortunately, they're set on that date, even though it's the same date as
the Houston Women's Festival. And we'll have some folks on next week to talk about that.
And the Houston Women's Festival will be from 2 to 12 p.m. at Jones Plaza downtown. So we're really looking forward to it. Patrice Pike, who was a contestant on Rockstar Supernova, is one of the people. And a lot of folks are excited about her being there, although, like J.D., I'm more excited about Deidre McCullough because I'm an old folky women's music person.
Well, we'd like to thank our guests tonight.
Our lovely Beth Kunkel-Brock and Jeff.
Bork, isn't it?
Huh?
Kunkel-Bork.
She said rhymes with Jungle Book or something, who were talking about the Laramie Project and the Candlelight Vigil out at San Jack College. You can check the college's website for more information.
And our guest from the Montrose Counseling Center,
Chris Kerr and Denise Davis Moore, about the Coming Out group that will be this Wednesday. Or you can go to the casual community education group. You have choices.
I'm glad we have choices.
We have choices. And next week we know we're going to have guests from the Women's Festival, and we have had a failure to remember. Actually, I'm not at my home computer, and so I don't have the who's coming up, but it'll be exciting guests. And you should tune in to Queer Voices right after Interchange with Larry Payne. We come on at 8 o'clock, and we're on just before World Village Cafe, and I hope folks will stay tuned for that.
We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m., for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Here at KPFT, your vote matters most. Now here's a word from one of our candidates.
My name is Joseph Kay. I stand for our mission to work for peace, justice, and the relevant education that will make a difference for all of us. I believe we need to empower our station with effective planning. We also need to create the means to identify what people need in our community and to use that to guide the wiser use of our resources. We can also develop powerful partnerships to work together on the great challenges we all face. I'll use my experience as a social worker, civil rights activist, union organizer, and family violence child abuse prevention specialist, along with my experiences in fundraising. For all of our sakes, vote for harmony and peace in my 7-part growth plan. Vote for Joseph K.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Calling all phone volunteers and wannabes. We need 3 to 6 people per shift, 2 to 3 hours each, to answer phones for KPFT's Fall Pledge Drive. And you'll get more than great conversation out of the deal. You'll also get a free meal donated by one of several local restaurants. Phone trainings are scheduled for Tuesday, October 17th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, October 21st at 10 a.m. Just sign up for the training.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.